for members only. Golf Smarter, number 453, published on September 9, 2014.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
237 rounds by September 1st in Canada with Michael Hamill.
This is Golf Smarter.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Michael.
Thank you, Fred. Finally, great to talk to you.
Well, finally. You know, it's so funny that I'm welcoming you to the Golf Smarter Podcast. You're very familiar with this program, aren't you?
Yes, I've listened to it, I think, since day one.
Wow.
It's way back.
I have to tell you how much I appreciate the friendship that we've developed on email. This is the first time we're speaking, but
yes,
you've kept me up to date on your game. You've kept me up to date on the weather, and it's really been fun. I really enjoyed getting to know you this way.
It's been great. Absolutely, you are definitely responsible for where I am today, without question.
Wait,
I know it leaves you speechless. I know.
Where you are in golf, not in life.
In golf and my excitement for the game of golf and the reason why I went back to school for Titleist and so on. But you started the ball rolling and got me excited in golf that I could realize I could actually do it.
Well, you were playing golf before you found the podcast, right?
No.
No, I
just started. I just so started confused. Listening to it. Was not playing golf. Was not interested in golf. So.
What got you interested in golf? Why did you get started?
I was just tired of my clients, my personal training clients and friends asking me to go golf. So I thought maybe I'd give it a try. And so I didn't want to look too foolish. So I started Googling some stuff and I found this thing called a Golf Smarter Podcast. And I thought it would give me information regarding what golf was about and what I needed to know. And I just started listening and it sounded interesting. And it was probably something that I could probably do for the rest of my life. And, that's just how it started the ball rolling and got me excited about understanding the game of golf.
Wow. So you were just a neophyte, a brand new golfer at the
yes.
time.
And, yes.
And tell me, where is your handicap today?
Unfortunately, it's gone up to about a 3.2. So.
Do you know how many people would love to say, unfortunately, I'm a 3? Why?
Know.
Where was it? Where did it get to?
It got too low as a 2.
Oh, my God.
So,
that's pretty remarkable. But how much golf do you play?
Well, people are going to hate me, but...
Oh, they already hate
was,
you. You said you're a 3. We all hate you already, Michael.
Okay. Yesterday, I set another personal record on 237.5 rounds for the season so far.
Here we are in the beginning of September. How many days in this year so far? How many rounds a week are you playing?
Roughly 2 a day, so up to 60 rounds a month.
Oh, we collectively hate you.
Okay.
Two
I've done 80 holes in a day.
Don't you work?
Yes, a lot.
Wow. Well, let's talk about where you're based and how much sunshine you get during the year.
Well, like I tell people, I'm not a fair weather golfer. And in Calgary, Alberta, we can get from earlier, we got snow yesterday south of us, about 2 to 3 inches, and it literally rained all day yesterday. And I was, besides me, there are two other guys dressed like people that were going to go to the Arctic. There's only 3 of us that were on the golf course yesterday, and I needed to get that round in to tie my last year's personal best of 237 rounds. And I just golf whenever I get a chance, because the season up here is so short. And last year I never had a chance to go away because we had those epic floods. And for the month of July, I never played much golf because I injured myself and I was basically homeless for 4 weeks because of the floods. So,
oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it was tough up here. And then you guys have, you know, all that drought, and then we have all this excess rain. So
we need a pipeline between Calgary and California, huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So well, we just, the last episode, we talked about drought conditions here in California, and you're experiencing the complete opposite, huh? You're in the central north?
No. Southern part of Alberta, just maybe about 3 hours shy of the Montana border.
Oh, so you're in central Canada, but on the southern part of it.
Western, yeah.
That's considered the west.
Montana's BC, BC, and then Alberta, and then Saskatchewan, and then Manitoba, and those are usually the four western provinces.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, well, I've never understood the west thing when they talk about, you know, like Ohio is, they consider the west. And to me, that's the Mideast. It's the Middle Eastern part of the country, but because this country is so East Coast centric, that California is like way west, but that everything from California to Illinois is the west. It's like, what? How do you do that? Anyway, I mean, I still don't understand. Pittsburgh is in the middle part of the country, and that's geography is not my best part. But golf is. Let's talk about your amazing accomplishments on the golf course. You've been playing for, I guess, if you've been...
Six years now.
Okay, so we've been doing the podcast. This is our 10th year of doing the podcast. You've been playing golf for 6 years. And what were your struggles when you first started? I mean, if you're already down to you've been down to a two, what have you struggled with? And is really banging balls, you know, 36 holes a day really make the difference?
Well, like we talked about before we were going to do this, and from some of the stuff that I've seen since I started playing golf, people practice very poorly, not the way they play. And when I first started, I could not hit a straight ball. It was all slice, banana slice, because no one told me that I had to release my hands. And not until I actually heard Tiger say that on one golf channel and said, you have to shake hands with the target. And as soon as I started shaking hands with the target, I started hitting the ball straight. I started controlling a little bit of a draw. I started practicing more short game. And in the beginning, I actually did hit a lot of balls on the range, but I also tore a bunch of ligaments in my elbow from overdoing it and hitting mats. Oh, and it never taught me anything. So unless someone actually has a golf pro readily available watching what you're doing, you're just basically solidifying bad habits by just swinging endless balls with no purpose.
That's interesting. Tell me more about the shaking hands with the target. I want to back that up a second.
So I'm a lefty.
Okay.
And I played my whole life playing hockey left. And back when in 1980 in grade 10, we went out in high school to go play golf. And my teacher gave me right-handed clubs. And I told him, I played hockey my whole life left-handed. Why would I play golf right-handed? He said, well, no one should ever play golf left-handed. So I tried hitting the ball around right-handed, and it was not normal for me. And so I gave it up. So I never took anything up to it. And then when I started playing with my younger nephew's left-handed clubs, I started getting the hang of hitting it, but everything was a slice. And so now you righties are going to have to follow me as a lefty. So you basically, when you take your swing towards the back, your thumbs will face behind you, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And as you go through the target line, when you hit the ball, your thumbs are now straight out in front of you. And then when you actually proceed, I'm going to say this for a righty, your thumbs are now going to start facing the target. And if you finish that hand position with both thumbs, 99% of the time, the ball will go straight with just a little baby draw. But most people don't finish. They don't finish the swing at the top, and they don't finish it at the back. And you have to shake hands with not only the target behind you, but you have to finish with your thumbs facing forward to the target line as well. And that's one of the biggest eureka moments I ever had, that when I saw that on the golf channel, when I went out to the range that day, I could hit the ball straight for the first time, and it was so small. Of a little thing, but it was the biggest thing that changed my golf.
Hmm.
So, and I've had people watch me and stuff like that, but they didn't know what I was doing wrong. And what I've found out in the last 6 years, golf is really finicky with the people that you meet. 50%, I think, of the people don't know what's wrong with a person's golf swing. And now the other 50% know, but they really don't want to share those secrets with you because they don't want you to improve.
Why would they? Oh, because they're instructors, they don't want to improve because they're out of business.
Not necessarily instructors, but there are definitely some instructors that I've actually butted heads with that I've helped people on my golf course, and I've managed to tweak their game, and they've had some of the best games ever, and it was just the littlest detail. And, you know, some, unfortunately, golf coaches want you as because that's their profession, they want to keep you around. If you fix something, they may not need you anymore. But just like with me being a personal trainer, I'm not going to be able to save someone's body and fitness just within one session. That's sort of like an ongoing thing. And from there, I get feedback from other clients and referrals. And that just keeps the whole ball running with personal training. And now that I found a passion for golf, I'm able to do that and actually see what's wrong with people's golf swing, because I had all those bad flaws coming, and probably more so. So, and because I play so much golf now, I'm trying to play catch up to all you guys who are playing golf since you were fetuses. Like, I'm so far behind in my, I will be 50 this year. And most of you guys have been playing golf, you know, since you were single digits.
Single digit in age.
Yes. Not single digit in handicap. Sorry.
But what, I don't understand what you're trying to catch up. You've surpassed most players as it is.
Oh, I know. But what happens though is once you, have you ever played hockey?
No.
So what happens though is for you to learn to play hockey now, all your patterns and motor skills have been solidified already. You might be able to take some of those things from baseball and from golf and simulate probably a better hockey swing, but you're never fully going to get the hockey swing.
I'll never fully get the golf swing. I started playing in my 40s.
No, that's not true, but it's much, put it this way, it's much harder biomechanically and kinetic wise to take up the game later in life.
Yes.
And then when you started, like when you look at McIlroy's swing when he was 5, it's flawless. He's better swinging at 5 than most guys have swung their whole career when they started at 20 or 30. Hmm. But you know what? Golf is pretty much the only sport you could probably do for the rest of your life. And that's why I just found so much passion with it, because of all the things that I've done to my body. I've had 19 serious lower back injuries and 2 dislocated pelvises. Golf is not one of the biggest things for me to do. So the body does not want to do rotation, flexion, and extension all at the same time. And then when you do it poorly, you actually create even more injury potential. So I had to rethink my training. I had to rethink my practice, all that stuff in order to get to where I am today. So like they say, it takes a village to, you know, create a child. And with your podcast, with my friends and clients and the TPI stuff, I just managed to condense it a little bit quicker than most people do in 10 or 20 years. Mm. So,
as a TPI, let's talk about what it is to be a TPI instructor and what that's done for your game.
Oh, that was tremendous. Down 2.5 days down in Mesa with, you know, top quality TPI Titleist professionals of LPGA, MDs, PGA Tour players, the personal trainers, chiros, physios, put together 12 assessments, of which 50% of the people that I've actually assessed fail. And they have failure built right into them. And so for me actually assessing myself, I actually found out that I actually had a left glute that would never fire. And if you can't fire your glutes, which makes up 80% of the golf swing from the ground up for power-wise, you're not going to have a very efficient game off the tee, as well as your mid-irons. And it actually even affected my short game. So it just showed me the full aspect on exactly what the tour pros have to go through to get golf fit. And I was fit before of doing a powerlifting and being a bodybuilder and stuff like that, but I wasn't golf fit. I did all the wrong things not applicable to the game of golf. And that's what was an eye-opener. And so when I came back to Calgary, I revamped my entire training program. I understood the flaws that my clients were talking to me about, their aches and pains, because as I start to get into golfing a little bit more, I understood what they were talking about, the game of golf. And then that completely changed my passion for fitness, and it was all specifically designed just for golf then.
Mm, fascinating. Let's pursue the concept of golf fit and what you learned about it, and why is that different from what you were doing as a bodybuilder?
Well, bodybuilder is just aesthetics from the outside and trying to have your upper and lower balance with your sides and your front and back. Mm-hmm. But golf...
That's not so bodybuilding is not necessarily a fitness, it's a display.
That's it. So even when I was a power lifter, I looked totally different as a power lifter, like very bulky, very thick compared to when I was a bodybuilder. Completely two different physiques.
Wow.
Like
wow.
The power lifter was extremely strong and powerful, but not very cut and not very lean, because you want to have a little bit more body fat to protect the joints And whereas a bodybuilder, my joints hurt all the time because I was so lean. I was less than 2% body fat and like paper thin skin and tired all the time. And but I wasn't that strong.
Interesting.
But I looked strong.
Yeah, that surprises me. I was always, when you see bodybuilders, they look incredibly fit and in amazing shape.
But as you get leaner and leaner and leaner, you don't have a lot of body fat to protect your joints, and you're extremely exhausted from trying to maintain such a low body fat level. Mm-hmm. And it kind of makes you go crazy too, because you're carbo depleted and you're tired and you're, you know, training 3-4 times a day and of cardio and weights. But when I went to the TPI and took up the Gulf Fitness there, it was a complete mind-blowing experience that I needed to now balance out both sides a little bit more efficiently, more rotation from not only my wrists, my elbows, shoulders, you know, mid-thoracic, upper back, neck. And at the same time, I really had to watch on over-torquing for my lower back. And I did tweak my back a few times when I first started on trying to swing too hard, and especially trying to keep up to guys that were I was playing with that could just crush the ball 80 to 100 yards farther. And I thought I just needed to swing harder, but it was there was just no power in my swing. I swung, but absolutely no power. And I learned how to slow it down like Freddie Couples and Ernie Els and get more rotation. And now, you know, I'm within 10 to 15 yards of these guys when I started.
And you're probably 10, 15 yards beyond them.
Some of them, yeah. Yeah, because if I, you know, I know how to play a cut now with my driver, and I know how to play a draw. So I can play both sides, because one of the guys I used to play with was taught by Mo Norman, our Canadian legend, and Billy Casper. And one of the biggest things that they said is you never, ever fight the wind. So in a draw wind for me, left to right, it's my go-to shot. And when there's a right-to-left wind, I've learned how to cut it into there, and sometimes my longest drive in a cut wind so far is 356 yards. So I got all that one that day.
Yeah, you did. And you weren't swinging hard.
Absolutely not. I was actually choked down, and I just cranked on it, and I hit up on it, and I just left it into the wind, and I said, just see ya, and I'll see you when I get to you. And by the time I lasered it and put it on the GPS with another guy, it came out to 356.
That's
something that most people are not willing to learn, to hit it a little cut and a little draw. And those things are game savers. And that's why I've dropped my index so far, because half the holes on my track out of 27 holes, half of them are cuts and half of them are draws. And I have to be able to work it around from right to left, especially on the long par fives, or I'll never get there in sometimes even three, because it's such a hard dog leg left on some of them when I go down into our valley that I just can't get home in three because I'm stymied by trees. So.
All right. Now more about Golf Fit, what that means and what we need to do to get there.
Well, the biggest thing, 80% of it is glutes and abdominals. And most people don't have strong enough glute to balance out both sides to stay stable. And like one of the guys I golf with, he's about a +4. It basically is from the ground up. You have to be stable from the ground up, creating power, and be able to transfer, you know, for a righty from right and load it to your left hip. And most people, when I start training them, they have absolutely no hip power whatsoever, no flexibility, no rotation. And most people just are arm swingers. And they've adapted to swinging with their arms. But eventually that gets to create tremendous torque in their back, their hips, their ankles, their knees. And after, you know, you get after age 50 and stuff like that, you start losing synovial fluid in your joints. Bones start to rub on bones, and the golf game is not that fun anymore. So that's why I can do what I can do. Like, I can golf 54 holes in a day, and the only thing that is sore is just my feet from walking. But other than that, my back is perfect. I don't overswing. You know, and some days are windy, and I just play within myself. But it has to do with Golf Fitness. So I'm basically an example of what Golf Fitness can do, that most people, you should be able to golf 36 holes pain-free walking.
Yeah, you should be.
Right. But most people, what happens is they don't train correctly.
I don't think most people have the stamina to do 36 holes in a day.
Exactly. Just like on the one email saying that one guy I was golfing with that could barely get through 18 because he smoked a cigar the entire time. And he was coughing and hacking. And I was surprised that he would walk and smoke that size of a cigar for the entire round. And by the time he walked up on one of our hills, he literally had to take a 5-minute break.
Wow.
And
wow.
We were getting behind and we pretty much almost had to leave him there on the tee box. So it all depends on what's important to you. And for me, I'm probably a different breed than most people. My grandfather taught me about if you're going to have something to do in life, have to do it with passion or don't do it at all. And I took up the game of golf and I gave it 3 years to see whether or not I could figure it out, whether or not my back would take care of itself and I wouldn't injure it anymore. And I just fell in love with it. So, and like I said, I rechanged my training to be more golf fit, more rotation, more flexibility. And I've got 10, 15 years in Taekwondo, so I didn't lack flexibility. But I lack golf flexibility. And in martial arts, that's a little different flexibility than in golf. So I started balancing out my left and right sides. I started swinging with an orange whip. Mm. I don't know if you ever heard of one of those.
Sure. I have the version of it by Skills. It's a similar.
Incredible. Yeah. Absolutely incredible device. So it creates lag time. It slows down your speed.
Yep.
I have an impact bag. I have PVC balls that I throw against the concrete wall. Abdominal work. Plus, I specialize in bodyweight training suspension systems. And that's all has to do with rotation and getting the body loaded. And so basically, I train my clients preseason. So their bodies are already ready to swing a golf club. And the little finesse stuff, that'll slowly come. But most people injure themselves within the first couple of weeks of playing in the season, especially when they're in Canada, if they don't go away. And they injure themselves because their body's not ready for that torque. So I get them ready for a golf swing, and they're ready to go out. They may not play the best because they haven't tweaked their short game, but their bodies are ready to swing a golf club, and fairly hard.
No, we don't want to swing hard, I thought we said.
Pardon me?
We don't want to swing hard, though.
No, but what happens is most people think they need to swing hard when they first start out. And you'll see guys, we've discussed this. I've actually even heard it on your podcast where guys will crank out the big dog right away on the range.
Yeah.
And they won't work their way up on the bag.
No.
And so they think they need to swing really hard. And I see it every day at my track. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to see it again this afternoon when I go play. Mm-hmm. Guys will crank out the driver first thing. And that's the worst thing you can do for your body. It's such an overloaded shock to the body that you need to slowly warm up the hands and the little muscles, and then the big boy muscles will automatically come.
It's so true. We've talked a lot about game golf in the recent episodes, and I was doing some analysis of my statistics, and I hit the driver 7 times around, because I hit my 4-wood off the tee a lot. 3-wood, 4-wood. I hit that all off the tee if it's narrow, or I know I can reach trouble, or I want to position myself better. So I won't take the driver, and I don't hit the driver that much. So that's for me, that is the least important club to be working on when I'm on the driving range. And sometimes when I'm on the driving range, the driver, I try to hit it like 100 yards. I try not to hit it really hard. I try to take a nice, easy, slow swing and, do something different with it, but not just crank it out. On the range, I'll take 2 or 3 swings with the driver. I have found, and please concur if you found this to be true as well, but my scores are going down because I'm working more on everything inside of 100 yards.
Did you want to know a big secret just between you and I? Because no one else is going to hear this, right?
Nobody at all.
Okay. What I have found in the last 6 years, and not only from my game, but the guys I play with that are near scratch, they play to a shot that they know they're going to get to within a hula hoop. And mine is my gap wedge, around 88 yards, 89. That's usually birdie. And my clients hate that because they like to get on and 2 on a par 5s. And what happens though is 99% of the time, they put it in the woods, sand bunker, and they come up with a bogey or double, and I'm coming up with birdie because I lay up to 88 to 90 yards, and I never go for some par 5s anymore. I lay up and I play the hole backwards to 100 yards or less out, like you just said.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest eureka moment that I've probably had in the game of golf, that there's just sometimes opportunities, unless it's downwind, that I just won't go try my track at some of the par 5s in 2. It's just too much to risk.
Yep.
And I already have kept my stats, and I know now that this game golf has come out, I've kept my greens and regulation and fairways and putting, And on the days that I lay up to like a front pin, I may not have a green in regulation, but I only have one putt because I chipped it tight.
Hmm. Well, listen, you're a Golf Smarter member. You know about the game golf and getting your extra discount. And thank you for being a Golf Smarter member. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm glad you found value in it.
Absolutely, Fred. And we had this discussion way back in the day where I could not believe that you were given that type of information for free. I was shocked, you know, from elite, you know, doctors like Dr. Bob Rattel and Rattella. And like there's hundreds of people that you've had on that I was shocked that, you know, it wasn't even a paid service. So I feel guilty, too, for, you know, listening to it for free.
Well, that's okay, because I never had Bob Rattella on the show.
Didn't you?
I'm pretty sure I've never talked to him. I've always wanted to.
Joe Parent.
Yes.
Was it Joe Parent?
Lots of time with Joe Parent.
There you go. Okay, that's the one I meant.
Episode number one. Dr.
There
Joe
you go.
Parent,
that's
Zell,
the one I
Zen
meant.
Golf.
Yes.
And probably about seven or eight more times after that as well.
Yes.
You know, he's been fantastic for the mental game.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And his books are amazing, too.
Yes.
What are your favorite exercises to do for the glutes and the core that you can share with us for free?
You know, just a simple lunge. I've actually started working on an invention based on glute thrusts, where you actually lie down on the ground with your knees bent, and you're lying on the ground, your hands face down, and you basically are lifting your butt in the air. And it's one of the ones that I actually got from TPI, but we actually do it with single leg. And I actually worked on single leg glute thrusts. And if you want, I can send some pictures and we can actually put it on your site if you want.
Oh, please. That's great.
That was one of the number one things that actually got me to reactivate my left glute. Because like I said, I've had so many injuries that I've actually had sciatic problems for the last probably 30 years.
I have sciatica problems, yeah.
And so that was one of the biggest things on getting the glutes more balanced for more power, but it's more usable power. And usually when muscles are tight, they're always being fired, and they actually bring in other muscle groups that continue the firing process, and that leads to more injury. So you want to have muscles that can fire at the smallest little reaction, but then also learn how to relax. And being seated is probably one of the worst things we can do as human beings. So I teach my clients sitting down is one of the worst things we can do to our body.
Oh, yeah.
Because it actually deactivates things. Mm-hmm. And most people don't squeeze their glutes and their abs. So I have people actually sit on Swiss balls at work, and they're actually bouncing around on the ball to keep their bodies active. And then I also make them drink a lot more water, so they actually have to go to the washroom at least once an hour. And that sort of deactivates some stress in their body from sitting for a 6 to 8 hour day.
Oh, interesting.
So I have a lot of the glute thrusts for building glutes, abdominals. You don't want to build up abs that are so thick and so strong that actually they limit the ability for the body to rotate. So, you know, tons of rotational stuff with, like I said, those PVC balls. Up here we go in kilograms. So roughly around a 5-10 pound ball that actually bounces, and it's a solid ball, and you throw it up against the wall, and if from about 5 feet out, and if it actually bounces back to your hands, that means that you're using the power of your glutes that actually brings the ball back. And most people who actually are arm swingers will throw the ball against the wall and it'll fall right to the ground. And there's no power there. And then that means they have to stand too close to the wall. So if you can actually throw, you know, one of those 10-pound balls from 5 to 6 feet at a concrete wall and it bounces back to you in the same force, in the same direction, that's a lot of glute power. But most people can't do that for 10 to 15 reps a side.
Hmm.
So, and also the biggest thing is flexibility. I specialize in flexibility as well. So tons of hip flexibility, hamstrings, groin, the side hips, the lower back, shoulders, wrists. Basically, it's a full kinetic from the wrists all the way down to the ankles and feet. So, and out of the, I think I've almost at 1,000 games now I've played in 6 years. There's 1,000 different ways to swing a golf club.
Sure.
But Titleist says there's only one efficient way to swing. And people are basically designed to swing a golf club at an early age. And if you've taken it up at, you know, your 20s and 30s and 40s, based on your past physical history, you're going to swing it a certain way. And I've seen some horrific swings where I can't even watch the people swing. It literally causes me back pain when I actually watch them swing. So they're holding their breath, like they're grunting, and it's almost like a Monica Seles tennis match. So, but, and you can tell that it's a powerless effort or effortless rather than effortless power. And, you know, like Freddie Couples, we just had him up here on the weekend and he won his, the senior tournament up here at the Champions Tour at Canyon Meadows, and just incredible fluid swing. So
what, you mentioned, holding their breath. What negative impact on your golf swing is holding your breath? Because I've seen a lot of people do just that. Just before they take the swing, they'll take a huge gulp of air and hold it and then do their swing. Versus somebody, and what I try to do is take a deep breath and let it out before I start my swing. What kind of negative impact is holding your breath?
Well, have you heard of the Valsalva maneuver?
No, I have not.
It's where deep divers that have no tanks on will actually do this breathing exercise to get more O2 in and more less CO2 out, so they can actually dive farther down. But what happens though is it creates tremendous pressure in your abdominal wall, and you could actually get a massive hernia. You could blank out. You could pop blood vessels in your eyes. Like you said, the biggest thing is that, you know, you take a breath in and then just slowly let about half of it out just so that you're still stable. It's like trying to lift a really heavy weight and let all the air out. Well, you're not going to be able to do it. But if you take too much air in and put all that thoracic pressure in, you're going to cause some trauma. And now you're not only working your body in a lateral fashion, you're actually doing rotation, flexion, and extension all at the same time. And those three things together, if you do one of them wrong, you're in a world of hurt. So you want to be able to have a little bit of breath in there to hold your transverse abdominis in on the inside, that sort of like stabilizes the spine, but not to the point where you're actually putting tremendous pressure on your spinal column as well. So
you said you didn't, that it's not good to build the abs too much.
No.
What are your favorite exercises for people to get enough ab strength, but not overdo it and still retain the flexibility that they need?
Well, I try to do three or four things at once. So the biggest one is that PVC ball throw. So when you're standing on the ground, now you've got to try to get your body weight lower, your center of gravity, which simulates a golf swing. You're taking this ball, you're swinging it in your arms, you're throwing it up against the wall, it's coming back to you. So that's tremendous power on one side, and then you switch it and you do the other side, so you have an equal opposite reaction. And you've probably seen people with very short backswings.
Yeah.
And so if you can actually create a little bit more of a backswing, you're going to have a much more fluid follow through, and that just adds 10, 15, 20 yards. And as I've been doing this now for 6 years, I've slowly increased my driving distance like about 5 to 10 yards every year, and that's a accumulation of all the flexibility stuff, of all the balancing, on trying to get my shoulders to rotate a little bit farther, on sort of like lessening my upper back muscle mass, because I'm not training really heavy in during the summer anymore like I do during the winter for when I ski. And it's just basically balancing out and trying to do things that are applicable for golf. That you're bent over is one of the hardest things on back compared to doing exercises where you're standing upright. And when you go in golf posture, a lot of people can't stay in golf posture. They have either a C-spine with it's very rounded, or it's overextended, and it's almost like a hyperextended state. And that creates tremendous pressure in their back. And a lot of guys stand up. And as soon as you stand up, you've lost your swing. And like I said, there's some of the stuff that I know now I never did 6 years ago in my training. And so I try to do things that are applicable to the rotation as well as the stability, and try to do – I don't do the stuff I did when I powerlifted, and I don't do the stuff I did when I bodybuilt. They're completely opposite to what golf is, and most of it is just applicable with rotation and staying centered and working from the ground up, and that's mostly with the glutes and the hip flexors.
But there's so much conversation of golfers today spending a lot more time in the gym and lifting.
Right. And you know, with some of the stuff that you watch on the – if you watch the Golf Channel and the Titleist Performance Institute, that's similar to some of the stuff that I do in actual gyms. But a lot of my clients that I train on at this one park we trained yesterday. Unfortunately, we trained a little bit in the rain. and at the clients' homes, and they don't have all that equipment. So we make do with the suspension system that I use, rubber bands, balls, PVC balls, and basically mat work and stuff that they can actually do on their own without actually having to go to a gym. And I'd love to have one of those huge TPI gyms that one of our guys, Jason Glass, out at Vancouver has. It's one of the biggest in Canada, and it's absolutely huge. It's like 2,000-3,000 square feet, and it's massive. They got every piece of equipment in there, kettlebells and everything. But that's not applicable to most people unless because they have to actually go to these gyms and actually train. So I try to make it very simplistic for my clients so they can do stuff on the road. And a lot of my guys are executives of oil companies and stuff like that up here, and they're on the road, and they don't have access to gyms sometimes because they're in their hotel. And so I get them to do stuff that they can actually just do right in their hotel room. And most of the stuff I do now is body weight training. Hmm. Only your body knows what your body needs. So most machines that I have my clients from 5 feet to 6 foot two, they don't fit in the machines.
Hmm.
But when you use your own body mass, your body mass knows what your body can do because it's applicable to your own joints and your levers and the kinesiology regarding your anatomy of your body. So, and that's coming. That's coming back. Body weight training stuff is now finally making its way back again. And in my 4 years of gymnastics, that was probably the best shape I ever was in my life when I did 4 years of gymnastics.
Can a golfer be too flexible?
Yes and no. In certain areas, like I'd love to be able to have Adam Scott's shoulder flexibility, but I don't think I'll ever have that. My shoulders are just too big from all the years of powerlifting, and it'd take me a while to detrain them. And so that's what I'm going to do over the winter on trying to get a little bit more shoulder flexibility. You can definitely have a little bit too much spinal flexibility, like, you know, the John Daly swings stuff like that. And eventually, as he gets older, that's going to be a little bit less. You know, Tiger's reduced his swing. And it all depends on, you know, if it's actually helping you or not. So too much flexibility, you're wound up like a rubber band, but can you generate the same ground force when you actually swing the club? And everyone is different. I have some clients that virtually have no flexibility, and yet, you know, they're single-digit handicaps, and they've adapted to that swing, and they're always on the fairway. They may not drive it long, but, you know, they're always on the fairway. And I don't drive it that long either, but I'm always on the fairway. My best club in my bag is my driver. I can steer that thing, choke it down. I can punt one out under the wind, and, you know, it's almost like a wedge to me.
Huh.
So.
Have you gotten a game golf yet, or you think about getting one?
Absolutely. That's probably something I'm definitely going to do in 2015.
Oh, well, you know, if you want to take advantage of that members-only discount, you got to jump before October 1st.
Oh, is that the date?
Okay. Yeah, they put October 1st on it. So you can get that perfect extra members-only discount. And I'd be really fascinated. Well, first of all, I want to get you on our challenge. We've got a challenge going for the month of September for low score. But, you know, you're starting low, so it's going to be hard for you to have an all-time low score to win our prize this month.
Well,
but I just think it would be fascinating to get your thoughts on what you're learning from the statistics and the data that it's coming through the game golf. I'd love to hear what you get out of that.
Well, most people, from what I've kept my stats on, and I started kind of doing stuff with my GPS and stuff like that and my laser, and I don't hit it as far as I think I do unless
nobody
I peer
does.
I know. That's sad. And it's you know, unfortunately, I think I still have an ego thinking that I'm actually going to hit it farther, but you literally have to peer it. And, you know, our course is wet, and in the mornings it's cold, the ball doesn't compress much. And it's basically taken me that I literally have to be my own caddy and say, you know what, Mike, you got to take one more club and just choke down and swing easy. And I'm getting actually more balls to the flag and actually rolling past. And in the past, I was always afraid to go by the flag.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm actually getting more balls to the flag and past. So at least I know I have a chance to actually hitting one. And that's just an ego thing. So I know I need to change that aspect of my game if I definitely want to get down to a scratch golfer. I don't know if it's going to be at the end of this season, but we have our club championship Saturday, Sunday. And I've been doing a lot of practice and trying to stay in the moment and listening to the positive stuff in my head and being a good caddy and taking more club. And, you know, and that's the biggest thing. I'm trying to get it there, but playing to within my own strengths. And definitely the game golf would be absolutely amazing to figure out all that stuff that you know within 5 or 10 yards that, you know, today I've only been hitting my 5 iron this amount, and I'm going to trust that.
Right. I'll tell you, I am blown away between game golf and the statistics that I've learned and what Dave Stockton said in our episode a couple months or two back when he talked about taking 2 clubs to every shot and not deciding until he's standing there. I was starting to see that most of my shots are my approach shots are coming up short. And so just like, okay, so you're not going to hit, you're not going to crush this one. But if you hit it well, you'll be at the hole or beyond it, you know, instead of coming up short all the time. And that's been a huge change for me as well, getting closer to the pin.
Right. And I'm helping this one guy right now that got me started in one of my best friends in 19 years. I'm actually helping him with his wedge game because he's had the worst happy hands that I've ever seen a human have in game. And he's great off the tee, mid irons, but his short game is just horrendous and it's tough to watch sometimes. And I always tell him, I said, you know, Kevin, that's not his real name, but I'll use it anyway. Is that
to protect the innocent?
Yes, to protect the innocent. He already knows he has issue with his wedges. I just said, you know what, buddy, take one more club, choke down and swing fluid. And he's flying that ball straighter to the target and he's got a new putter and his putter is on fire. And I said, that's all you need now. You don't need to impress me by trying to hit that 9 iron 180 yards because you're not. You're going to thin it. You're going to fat it, and then you swear, and you know it's a rough game from that point. Go take that 8 iron, choke down, and let your ego go, and now he's starting to enjoy the game a little bit more.
Fun. But, what are happy hands?
He has the yips, so he does the DC chin all the time.
Now you're really speaking in Canadian. What?
He double taps the ball. So he stutters his hands. Uh-huh. On his practice swings, he's like a Charles Barkley. Perfect swings. But as soon as he steps up to that ball, something triggers in his head. And he spends a little bit too much time over the ball. Now he's got massive swing thoughts. And I can tell. And I've pulled him off the ball several times to back off. I said, Kevy, you got to back off. You're thinking now. I can tell the wheels are rolling. 2 practice swings. So one of the drills that I gave him is he steps behind the ball off to the side. He takes a practice swing. He walks forward, practice swing. And on a 3rd swing, he actually hits the ball. And 99% of the time, it's on the green. But the longer he spends over that ball, he starts changing the club loft lie angles. And so he either thins it or he opens it up and he swings too slow and the ball comes out of the grass and he actually double taps it. The DC chin.
Oh. Wow.
And that's frustrating to watch. And he does that once or twice around, or he'll fat it or he'll thin it out the back. But it's just something that most people just don't spend enough time on practicing their short game.
Right. Completely agree with you.
Yeah. And that's
Now that I've gotten to a point where I'm starting to see significant improvement in my game, I see it's because of the short game. I've talked about it for such a long time, but since I've been working on it and see the numbers going down, it's like, oh, now I get it.
Absolutely. And so that's what I tell people when I play, and probably I'd say 70-80% of my rounds have been with perfect strangers. And then they figure out what I do. You know, they always ask me, what do you do? And I go, oh, wow, we get free lessons today. And I go, well, not really. I'll be your caddy, but I'm not going to give you a lesson. And so I guide these people around my track because they've never played it. And some of the stuff, I give them advice. And one guy was from a Suncor executive here and had never played our track. And he had his son-in-law and daughter. And I guided him around. He never shot under 100. And once I kind of figured out his game, he pretty much put the driver back in the bag and hit his 3-wood. I've never seen a guy hit a pure 3-wood off the deck than this guy. And at the end of the round, he shot an 88. And he'd never shot under 100 before because he was such a poor manager of his game that he always thought he needed to go for every green. But his 3-wood kept him in the fairway, and his wedge play, take one more club. I help read his putts, where the green was, and how to bring the ball in. But that's a huge thing on trying to manage your golf game. Leave the ego in the trunk and play to your strengths. And if your strength is 150, go to 150 yards. If you can't hit a driver that day, leave it in the trunk. Don't be tempted by taking that out. I'd rather see someone hit a 3-wood, 250, you know, 225 or whatever. But hit 2 straight shots, you're on in a par 5. So.
Awesome. Yeah, and everyone sing along with me. Never follow a bad shot.
With a stupid shot.
Yeah, it's so big. It's like, oh no, I'm in the woods here. That's no problem. No. The ball's covered with everything. There's a root behind me, and there's tree trunks. But I can get there in two. Right. No, you can't. And you know what? You're going to double, maybe triple bogey the hole. Unless you just hit it right out in the fairway, take that shot, and bogey the hole. Easy. What's the problem?
And you save a shot.
Yeah, at least one.
So another secret between you and I, one of the best things that I ever did was actually enter an amateur contest.
Really?
Because what I got out of that was I actually had to become a caddy to myself on what would I actually tell myself. Under no pressure from the side, what would I tell myself, Mike? What would I do in this situation? Well, I probably wouldn't go through those trees like I normally would golfing with the guys to see if I could prove I could do it. And I won my first amateur last year. And I started playing, managing my golf game. I started working the hole backwards to my strength. I started learning how to slow my swing down a little bit more tempo, the breathing stuff. And playing within my own strengths, just like Arnold Palmer said, play your own game. And most guys do not play their own game. Most guys right away, they go to the tips. Oh, we got to play from the long tees. Well, at our track at 140 slope and 7,500 yards, that's way too far for most people. So that's a long day.
Yeah. And 140 slope is not an easy track.
No.
That is,
and it's
very
long.
Tough.
And it's tight, and you go into a forest, and you're going down a valley, that has -6 slope from the top down to the bottom. Hmm. And most guys take a double par or worse. Oof. So,
wow. Michael, it's so great to finally get to talk to you and for you to share what you've learned and what you can teach us. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for contacting me. This is what I want to do now. So this is my passion, and like I said, I'm trying to get caught up to all you other guys that have been playing golf for so long. And I just want to share what I've learned and grow the game, because I know it's suffering. And I know we need to have more juniors in there, like a train the Golf Canada juniors here. And if the parents golf, the kids will golf, and we need to get that going. And we need to get more people into the game of golf, because it's something like you can do for the rest of your life. And I've met some amazing people from around the world in the last 6 years of playing golf, like you're one.
So what's your cure? How do we get more people to the game?
You know what? We need to be friendlier on the golf course to each other. We need to help people out, right? We need to help people out. We need to...
Yeah, but that's for the people that are already here. How do we get new people out to the course?
By bringing someone out. And I know we definitely need to have a lot more par threes. And like that one thing you had years ago, that one golf course where you could actually play three holes at a time.
Huh.
Do you remember that?
No.
Yeah, a golf course that has sets of three holes. You can play as many as you want. You can play 3, 6, 9, whatever. But we need to have easier courses. We need to have golf superintendents having pins that are much easier. With regards to the hole size, well, we're putting. We're basically playing golf on the level that the pros play. And, pin placements that are inside of slopes, on ski hills, on ant hills, that are pins that are inaccessible, it slows the game down. And in the tournament, yeah, go ahead and place the pins, in ridiculous places. But for the average population to have a good game, and when you leave that day and you say, man, I had a great experience, I'm going back to that golf course. You don't have to prove anything that, our track is 140 slope because we have the pins in stupid spots. And unfortunately, we've had that the last couple of years because we've had people cutting our grass but don't necessarily play golf. And they put the pins in places that no one's ever told them not to put them there. So it actually slows things down. And when everyone is four putting, it's very frustrating. And golf, you need to have it as an enjoyable experience. And unfortunately, from what I've seen, it's not that enjoyable anymore. And you need to have people have a great experience. It's going to be a long day. You expect it 4 to 5 hours or more. By the time you get there, it's probably longer. But give them a good experience, good memories, and they'll come back. And that's what I try to do at my track as a golf member now. I'm finally a member at a track for the last 3 years. And I try to give everyone that I play with a great experience. I lead them around like their own personal caddy and, cracking jokes and stuff like that. And just making it a little bit easier, because golf is tough.
It is a hard game to master. And just when you think you've got it, someone taps you on the shoulder and gives you a slap in the face. And it's like you take an eight right on a par four. It's like, oh, no, I had a par streak going. And then, boom, the blow up.
So, Michael, if people wanted to see your stuff online or get in touch with you to maybe get some flexibility and strength training lessons or TPI certified work, how do we get in touch with you and where do we find you?
Well, I've got about 3,000 or 4,000 training videos. I'm a little obsessed with my videos on Top Cop Guru. So I was watching Cops one night, and that was the only thing that actually came to mind that I could actually use on YouTube. So just T-O-P, C-O-P Guru, and you just put in the browser, bodyweight training, suspension systems, golf.
So wait, Top Cop Guru is the YouTube channel?
Yes.
Okay.
That's all right. Where all my videos are.
And I'll put one of them on our blog. I'll share one of your videos. Which one do you think we should see?
Something that I train with clients. I also use a system called Birdie Balls. That is one of the best things.
I love the Birdie Balls, if you can find them anymore.
Great friends with John down there, and he keeps sending me because I'm the only guy, I think, in the world that actually hits them in minus 10 or 15 in the wintertime. And I put them through the test, and I've literally worn out two boxes. And I hit those with real balls into a net with my impact bag and orange whip. And so if you look up anything on Birdie Ball in training golf in the park under my Top Cop Guru site, you'll find it. And all my other information's on there with regards to my email address and stuff like that. And if people want something answered, I'll be more than happy to help them out with best I can.
Well, thank you. And again, thank you so much for sharing your time and for your support for such a long time.
Oh, now I'm excited to go play now.
Duh. Yeah. And now, and again, and again, and again. I just received an update from Michael about how he did over the weekend, and he said, quote, "I placed third in my club championships. Congratulations." What was a new experience being in the final group and the extra long five-plus hour round. Final round. Ooh. I played against someone who was very young and obviously a pro golfer. He's a former plus four and just crushed his drives. No way I could keep up with his long game, but my short game on Saturday kept me in a close second place. Sunday, it was just a hard round. Excited for next year. I'm sure you are. Congratulations, Michael. And thanks again for your continued support on the podcast and for reaching out and wanting to be on the show. Please keep me updated once you thaw out up there in the next season. Also, to let everyone know, I've posted one of Michael's YouTube videos on our blog entry for today's show. A couple of quick notes. I need to apologize to last week's guest, Don Chelomedos. I mispronounced his name by transposing the L and the M, and it's actually Chelomedos, not Chemeleros. Sorry, Don. Next, I'm headed down to Mexico, southern tip of Baja, Mexico, for Baja, California, for a week-long vacation to stare out into the sun. And while I'm there, I'm excited. I'm going to be playing the one and only at the Palmia, and more on that in future episode. But if you're on a regular schedule of downloading and listening to Golf Smarter soon after it's published on a Tuesday, please note that episode number 454, our next one, Golf Simplified, with Director of Instruction at the Boulders Golf Course in Scottsdale, Donald Crawley. It'll be published at the end of this week. So you can get the show, you can wait till Tuesday, or it'll be there by Saturday, and then you'll have to just go another week and a half out at Golf Smarter. You can handle it, I'm sure. And then once I return, we'll look back at the 1969 Ryder Cup with author Neil Sagabell. He returns to discuss his new book, Draw in the Dunes. And that's going to be the week of the Ryder Cup. So that'll be some great history lesson to go along with watching the tournament. And we're also going to have updates on our Game Golf Welcome September Challenge. Remember, Game Golf is now only $199 U.S. Also, Golf Smarter members have till October 1st to receive an additional 10% discount with the checkout code GOLFSMARTER. And that exclusive discount comes directly from CEO John Maguire. Golf Smarter is the only place on the planet or in the cloud that you're going to find that discount. That's why we have to keep it private and make it available only to our members. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, I'd love to hear from you. Please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.